You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Be joined here in the studio by our postdoctoral psychology fellow, Ashley Berryman. How are you doing?
Kia ora. Thank you for having me on. I'm doing good on this beautiful, nearly spring morning.
I know.
It makes a world of a difference.
Actually, I just said on the show earlier that it's just been like the I don't know what you call it, but the seasonal or the space halfway point between the equinox and solstice.
Yeah.
So it's technically astrological spring now.
Oh,
so,
awesome.
You know, if you want to say that it's spring, you're welcome to.
Keep that one in the mental log for today.
Yeah. If anyone's like, oh, the winter keeps dragging on, you'd be like, don't worry, it actually is spring.
You just got to make it to that shortest day and then it's all upwards.
yeah, totally. So could you give us a little bit of a rundown about yourself and what you've been studying?
Cool, awesome. Yeah, so I have just finished my PhD here at Otago and actually graduated on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. But congratulations.
Thank you so much. I got a head start on commencing my postdoctoral fellowship approximately 2 weeks ago now. I was incredibly fortunate to receive early funding from the Neurological Foundation of New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm working as a full-time researcher here at the university, extending the research that I did during my doctoral studies and a little bit of my honours studies as well, to now move towards wider national-based studies, if you will, and start to finally move from characterising things in the lab, which I'm happy to talk about in more detail, to finally being able to help people actually out in the community. So it's quite a meaningful shift for me rather than merely just starting a job.
Yeah, cool. Oh, that's really exciting. And so when you were studying here, you've been doing your studying and researching endometriosis.
Yeah.
But when you were studying here, I think maybe just for the context of the students who are listening, what did you start out studying? And was that something you were kind of looking into? Or were you kind of just doing doctor stuff and then trying to choose your path? Like everyone's, you know, lots of students are facing that kind of challenge at the moment.
I started out with a Bachelor of Psychology here, and I did that as a 4-year degree because I had additional papers on as a minor.
Cool.
And then I had applied to med school through the undergraduate route and unfortunately didn't make it that time.
Yep.
But that was fine. I decided that I had wanted to give research a shot anyway. So
I continued
on with my honours research year and had anticipated applying again to the Otago and Auckland med schools at the end of that year.
Yeah.
But as those deadlines approached, I was offered a PhD scholarship here at Otago.
Yeah.
And it was quite substantial.
Yeah, yeah.
And sort of solidified the decision for me anyway. I thought, hey, look, I'm still going to be a doctor, quote unquote, if that's the title you're concerned about, which wasn't really the route I wanted anyway.
Yeah.
I'd always wanted to somehow specialise in women's health or be able to help in the field of obstetrics and gynaecology of women and children.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just felt right to me to continue on the research I was already loving, and I'd already sort of established rapport with some participants and patients in their capacity.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I think this is right for me. And it meant that I was straight away working with people rather than starting studying again. And I'm so grateful that I followed that path now.
Mm-hmm.
Because here I am starting my career doing what I always wanted to do.
Yeah. And you've avoided the public health system.
Yeah, that too. We won't go down that route.
But it does sound like what you're doing is something that's really important and current as an issue, and something that gets raised a lot with women's health in New Zealand and globally. Can you talk to us a little bit about, actually, maybe first we should talk about endometriosis in general, because it's something that, as we talked about a tiny bit before the interview, is like often people only have really small grasps of, and sometimes the science is even changing. We talked about how they changed the terminology of PCOS to PMOS.
Correct.
But could you tell us a little bit, just a little bit of a brief rundown about what endometriosis is, so the audience has a better understanding?
Of course. For those who may be listening who have endometriosis, you may be aware that the terminology around it is consistently evolving and shifting.
Mm.
So really, really simply, it used to be considered a gynecological health condition, meaning it affects people assigned female at birth or those who have a uterus and ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it is essentially when that lining of the inside of the uterus is growing not inside the uterus, where we wouldn't typically expect to find it. And this can be as far spread as sort of surrounding issues and areas in that pelvic region, like the bowel or bladder, all the way up to the lungs. And even some cases, it has been found in the brain, which, as you can imagine, is very alarming.
Oh my God, yeah.
So essentially abnormal cell growth in places it's not supposed to be detected.
Yeah.
But now we are considering it a widespread chronic inflammatory condition that has these complex estrogen-dependent and progesterone-resistant responses. I appreciate that sounds quite complex, but what that means is it has significantly horrible flare-ups for some people with the condition at times of ovulation and menstruation. So across that menstrual cycle, people are quite literally living in debilitating pain for 2 weeks out of the month. And then I do want to preface by saying I know that there will be people listening who have this and going, it's not only 2 weeks out of the month. There are people who just have this chronic persistent pain across their body. And then and some people it is isolated to the pelvic region, but of course if you have these cells grown on your diaphragm or in the lungs, you have a myriad of other symptoms that come with that.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, that's incredible to know that it can grow in such a variety of places as well. And so I suppose for like people in New Zealand, what is our like current, what's it looking like at the moment for research and support for Kiwis? I mean, I know you're looking into this now, so you're probably going to have twice as much to tell us in two years time or something. But maybe just a little bit about like what it's looking like for New Zealanders. We talked about how like terminology's changed and they're discovering new things about it. But how's it kind of tend to affect New Zealanders, and how's that looking like it might change? Obviously, a lot of that's with public health and then private health, but a lot of people can have the ability to get into and afford. But there's also that, I think endo in particular has this horrible feeling that disenfranchises people because they don't know what's happening. Doctors aren't really sure. They get sent between different places, and like it's when you're experiencing that kind of chronic pain all the time, it's so disheartening for those people.
Yeah, I mean you're on the money with that. Just anecdotally speaking, from people I've had visiting my lab, I know that New Zealand Stats reports a diagnostic delay of around 8 to 10 years, but I've seen people who it's taken 15 years from their first symptom onset to have a formal diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And that's because at present, the only way to receive a formal diagnosis, having it actually logged with an endometriosis stage in your medical charts, is via laparoscopy, which is a keyhole surgery generally through the lower abdomen to actually access the uterus and surrounding organs. But there has, thank goodness, been a change that has just been all across the media in the endo and menstrual health space, is that in, I don't know the exact date, but in the very, very near future, GPs, general practitioners and nurse practitioners are going to be able to diagnose endometriosis based off symptom presentation, familial history if your mother or grandmother has the condition, which is going to be a huge shift for these people who have been used to waiting up to a decade to get a diagnosis. Yeah, yeah. And it's not just about having the label of I have endo that people often think comes with this change. It's that if you know what you actually have, we can more adequately treat the symptoms earlier, give people the appropriate hormonal interventions they may need, or pain management strategies, and send them to relevant support groups. Like in New Zealand, we have Endo Warriors Aotearoa. They are fantastic at supporting people who are living with this and sister conditions to endo. So massive, massive news in the endo space. And I think we're quite lucky in New Zealand that we have a large body of flourishing research looking at the impacts that endo has on people's well-being and performance at work and school and sexual and friendship relationships. I mean, there's so many factors that people don't think of when you just think medically of a condition. And I guess that's where I tried to come in, looking at sort of a more narrow scope that to date no one had actually explored, and that's cognitive functioning or thinking abilities in people who had this condition. So I'd seen through interviews and read on other online published studies that people are complaining of cognitive difficulties or brain fog, not being able to perform as well at school or university, taking time off work. People are missing out on promotions, which is, you know, this is now tapping into financial losses because of having this condition. And so I wanted to be able to explore this more objectively, scientifically. We have to confirm that these things exist at a scientific level that we can measure. And I'm now finally in a position to be able to say I can do something about it. I have confirmed that what these people are complaining about is in fact true. There are measurable differences. Now let's try to make a change.
Cool. Oh, that's really cool. Especially like we're talking about how there's so much Well, I guess with chronic pain, there's always going to be so much crossover with other, like, physical, and I suppose that kind of is the line between physical and mental disabilities as well. Chronic pain, like, that's where everyone's going to have all the crossover with anything, really. Yeah. But I suppose moving on to your research, what are you going to be looking into? Like, how does that, what does that end up turning into for a research project? Are you, like, just studying things? Are you just reading books? Are you asking lots and lots of questions? Yeah. Are you, like, using sciencey tools?
Yeah, great question. So far, I have had people come into my lab where they have completed tasks both on paper and on a computer so that I can measure their cognition.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I record their brain activity. So I use a device called electroencephalography, which is probably more common and quite a few people have heard of. And that just measures the amount of brain activity over certain regions that I'm interested in. And then I use another device called near-infrared spectroscopy, and that measures the changes in oxygen going across the brain.
Yeah.
And so I can see how well someone's brain is functioning, essentially, while they're completing these tasks. And it was from my earlier studies that I found there are differences in people who have endometriosis, but it's not necessarily bad news, even though, yes, they did show difficulties on some of these tasks. We can do some fancy statistics to determine actually what other things might be contributing to this. It's not just having the diagnosis of endometriosis.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably not surprisingly, it turns out that the amount of pain someone is in is what's driving those key differences.
Yeah.
I mean, if you imagine you're sitting here and you're in, you know, 8 out of 10 pain, obviously you're not going to do as well solving a math problem as someone who's bright and chirpy,
totally. Actually, that's something I've kind of wondered about. How do you go about measuring and researching pain when pain is, like, so subjective or complicated? Like, everyone's going to say completely different terminology. I know that we often use a 1 to 10 when you're at a doctor and stuff, but that always feels so farcical. You're like, you're sitting there being like, maybe a 3, maybe 5, I don't know.
It is. You're dead on that it is entirely subjective, and that's why those scales, even though they might seem a little bit surface level, are still so, so important, because your 8 might be my 10, or someone else's 6 might be a 1 to me, and that's also dependent on how long you've lived with chronic pain.
Yeah.
I mean, the threshold for pain, people start to interpret it differently. If they go, oh, well, I've always lived at a 5, so now this has become my new 3. And so I do still use those self-report scales, but a slightly wider spectrum, and some more verbal-based questions to gauge what they're feeling on the day. You know, pain isn't just a 1 to 10, it's also, are you feeling nauseous right now?
Yeah.
Is it shooting down your legs, or is it a dull throbbing that's mainly localised to your abdomen or pelvic region? And so we can gain a bigger picture with that pain.
Oh, wow. No, that's super interesting. I guess just for the audience's sake as well, have you got any kind of, like, last words, things that you want to talk about to do with endo? Or, I mean, we're a student radio, so students that are interested in looking into or researching things around those topics, or for people, listeners who might have experienced this or have had family members and stuff experience this?
Yeah, I mean, whether or not you have endo yourself or you know people who have it, I think it is such a budding field to be able to work in. It's quite a privilege to work in it. Since the news going out about me receiving this, this new lot of funding with the Neurological Foundation, wow, the reach that I've had from the public and the comments I have been reading, and people coming to me in person almost in tears saying, you don't know the impact that this is having. My wife has this, my 16-year-old daughter has this, and she's not able to actually come and see you herself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm only human. It has actually, like, brought me to tears before.
Of course,
and I go, you sit quite isolated sometimes in a lab doing this stuff, and you worry about the research outputs, and you know people are reading it, but then you actually see people with the condition and you just go, holy cow.
You
actually see that people are struggling with something.
Totally.
And it is so meaningful to help them. Or even similar conditions. I'll always advocate for pursuing any area of research on women's health, because, I mean, hey, we weren't even required to be included in clinical trials until the 90s.
Yeah,
so that's
grossly
concerning. Crazy. We've got a long way to go to catch up to where we should be by now. And that's not to say we have not made significant strides, but please, please pursue menstrual and women's health studies if it is something that you are thinking about. And I think people should know that you don't have to go into a medical field to do that. I'm mm-hmm. now a neuropsychologist by trade, mm-hmm. and I am looking at cognition and brain activity in people with women's health conditions. Mm-hmm. There are so many aspects to look at. You don't have to be in medicine or in gynae.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ashley. It's been a pleasure to have you
on. Thank you for having me on.
We've got a track that you suggested here.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.